Welcome to Tangible Remnants, the podcast that makes adaptive reuse exciting, accessible, and sustainable for every building owner. I'm Nikita Reed, an architect and a champion of reusing existing buildings. I'm excited that you're here, so let's get into it. Welcome back. This episode is going to be a replay from another podcast I was on earlier this year called Crew Conversations, which is a podcast presented by Crew Baltimore that dives into the dynamic world of commercial real estate. Now, when I say crew, you might be thinking of the boating sport, but nope, not talking about that. The crew I'm talking about stands for Commercial Real Estate Women, and it is the industry's premier business networking organization. Membership offers unparalleled business connections, leadership development opportunities, and access to crew members in your market, and there are more than 14,000 professionals across the globe. I'm a member of Crew Baltimore, and I highly recommend you checking out your local crew chapter if you're looking for a way to connect with more women in real estate. So in this episode of Crew Connections, I'm joined by Carla Hinson of Cross Street Partners, and we explore the intersection of historic preservation and sustainability in Baltimore's built environment. We talk about navigating complex regulations to finding creative solutions for adaptive reuse, as well as diving into the challenges and opportunities of preserving the city's architectural legacy while embracing environmentally responsible practices. So, because of that, I thought this would be a perfect episode to replay here on Tangible Remnants. Now, Carla will tell you more about Cross Street Partners, but I'll tell you a little bit about Carla before I let the episode play. Carla is the Director of Development Advisory at Cross Street Partners and manages development projects for real estate and financial advisory clients. In this role, she provides additional capacity, primarily to nonprofit organizations, to help execute their development vision. She supports projects by securing and managing public and private grants, assembling complex tax credit financing, and coordinating real estate due diligence, entitlements, design, and construction. Her most recent successes include assembling the financing for the $14 million redevelopment of the Thurgood Marshall Amenity Center at PS 103, which was delivered in 2023, and the $16 million Upton Mansion project, which is currently under construction. In addition to her role leading advisory projects, Carla also supports Cross Street Partners affiliate UACD to deploy New Markets tax credits allocation and development projects nationwide. She serves on the Waverly Main Street Board and is, of course, a Crew Baltimore member. I'm excited for you to hear this episode. One other thing before we jump in, I'll be opening registration for my Historic Tax Credits 101 webinar soon. If you're already on the mailing list, you'll get notified first, and you'll be able to receive a discount on the webinar if you sign up. If you're not already on the mailing list, now is a great time to join. You can opt in via the show notes to this episode or by going to nikitareed.com. That's nikitareed.com. All right. Without further ado, please enjoy this replay of episode 17 of Crew Conversations, titled Preserving Baltimore's History While Building a Sustainable Future, featuring me and Carla Hinson. Enjoy.
I'm Shanna Carroll, president of Crew Baltimore, and this is Crew Conversations, a podcast about Baltimore and advancing all women in commercial real estate.
Welcome to Crew Conversations. My name is Nikita Reed, and I am a senior associate at Quinn Evans, and I'm joined today by Carla Hinson.
Thanks, Nikita. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to be joined by you today so that we can talk about preserving Baltimore's history while building a sustainable future, because I know one of the things that we often deal with is people thinking that things that are historic can't be sustainable or vice versa. But I know I'm an architect and you're a developer. Do you want to actually introduce the company that you work with?
Yeah. So I'm Carla Hinson. I work at Cross Street Partners. We're a vertically integrated real estate development company. We do development on our own projects. We also have a construction arm and a property management arm. Our specialty is adaptive reuse and historic preservation. So I'm really excited to jump into this conversation with you, Nikita. I'm the Director of Development Advisory. So I specifically work with our third-party clients, primarily nonprofits who have a development vision and need a little bit of extra capacity to really execute on that vision and put the financing together that's needed to make it work.
Which is amazing, because the way that our two fields typically work together is that Carla figures out and helps clients understand how to put the money together to construct and build the building. And then I'm an architect, and so architects typically help the clients actually redesign the buildings to be able to get them to fruition. And so both sides are very much needed in this. And a lot of times whenever I have a historic building with an interesting program that's a little bit wonky and out of the ordinary, I will absolutely call Carla for some advice and make some connections, because we have a growing enjoyment of working on wonky buildings around Baltimore City.
Absolutely.
And so one of the things that often comes up is that if it's a historic building, how do you even make it sustainable? I think a lot of times people see a historic building and assume that the only way it can be made sustainable is to either tear it down or put solar panels on it. But there are so many other things that need to be done to a building to make it sustainable. And a lot of times it's not the sexy, flashy, renewable energy. A lot of times it's the somewhat boring things like better insulation, better windows, better air sealing, some things that you don't always see. There are a number of different rating systems that clients can go after, from Enterprise Green Communities to LEED or Passive House, Living Building Challenge. And so, Carla, as you're talking to clients about different financing options, are there any green systems that help them reach their financial goals?
Well, I think a huge benefit specifically for historic buildings is the state of Maryland's program, where they provide a 5% tax credit bonus for LEED Gold buildings who use state historic tax credits. And state historic tax credits and federal historic tax credits are a huge part of putting together a capital stack to renovate these buildings, which is an expensive and complex undertaking. But the state's program provides a little bit of extra financial benefit to pursue LEED Gold certification. So it's something we generally always do. And it's a beautiful thing when you can renovate a historic building, bring it back to life, and then also have it really be state of the art, sustainability certified.
Absolutely. And Maryland is one of the few states that actually does provide an additional green incentive on our historic tax credit to really drive home the point that buildings can be historic and sustainable. And for those of you who have a historic building that you might want to be working on, when you are hiring an architect, please make sure that the architect has experience working with historic buildings. My firm, Quinn Evans, has a lot of that, but there are other firms around Baltimore that are also fantastic. But the number of architects who call me after they realize that, hey, I was pretending that I knew preservation and I actually don't, is noticeable. So please make sure you hire an architect who is familiar with the Secretary of the Interior standards and actually understands how to navigate the historic tax credit process.
And also understands LEED certification.
Yes.
That is sustainability minded. I feel like Quinn Evans is one of those firms that also has sustainability at the core of what you do. And that's hugely important when you're working with an architect to have somebody who is, puts that at the forefront.
Yeah. And for all of our listeners who may be also in appraisals or other parts of commercial real estate, it's also important to know that there are some appraisers who are trained in doing appraisals on buildings that actually take into account the various sustainability features that are in the building, because a green building should be appraised for more than a non-green building. So just something to also keep in mind as you're looking at getting some underwriting done. And so, and let's talk about some case studies around Baltimore City. And so one of the ones that comes to mind that I know you recently worked on is PS 103. So let's talk a little bit about how that project came to be.
That was with one of our clients, Beloved Community Services Corporation, which is led by Dr. Al Hathaway over in the Upton neighborhood. And it was the renovation of Thurgood Marshall's Elementary School, which was built in the 1870s. And it had been a very prominent elementary school in Upton. It closed. It was later used for some community nonprofit space, but it had been vacant since the 90s. And it recently was redeveloped and opened to the public in 2024. It's a beautiful schoolhouse building if you think of like the clip art image of a school, this is what it looks like. And it's really prominent. It's a really prominent feature on this block of the 1300 block of Division Street in Upton. And it was an eyesore since the 90s when it was vacant. It also had a fire. So we almost lost it to a fire in 2017. It's really, I think, from a sustainability perspective, it's now a LEED Gold certified building. But more than that, I think another important aspect of sustainability when it comes to historic preservation is that we're reusing a building, you know, which minimizes the need to obviously manufacture new materials, but it's also within the context of an existing neighborhood where existing people are. So you're not needing to, go out into the suburbs for new land to create something beautiful. It's connected, really well connected to public transportation. It's sustainable, not just in its building construction and design, it's sustainable in its siting and its, accessibility to the neighborhood. So now it is the headquarters for a think tank out of College Park called the Judge Alexander Williams Center for Justice, Ethics, and Education, as well as the nonprofit headquarters for Beloved Community Services Corporation and a few other mission-oriented nonprofits. And it's beautiful, it's energy efficient, and it's reusing a vacant asset into something that's really adding a lot of value to the community.
Yeah, and it is such a beautiful building. I had the opportunity to tour it at one of the Crew Baltimore events as well. And you touched on a really important concept about embodied carbon versus operational carbon. So like by not tearing down the building, we're actually maintaining and preserving a lot of the embodied carbon from the building that's already there. So all of the energy that went into extracting the clay to make the bricks, to transport them to the site, to building it, all of that stuff, that didn't have to get thrown away and sent to the landfill. And it's also one of those great things that allows Baltimore to feel like Baltimore as opposed to like everywhere else, because we're reusing a building right. That's been in the community for over 100 years. And so that's one of the other charms of building reuse, as well as making sure that we're able to make a place feel like a place and continue that legacy into the future. Mm-hmm. And the operational carbon, like you mentioned, since the building is high performing and energy efficient, as the building is operating, so keeping the lights on, running the HVAC, it's going to not be consuming as much energy as it would otherwise. The building really is a great case study for how to reuse a historic building and upgrade it to sustainable features.
Want to learn more about the Unknown Ladies of Architecture? Then I recommend you listen to She Builds Podcast, where we tell the stories of remarkable women who have shaped the design and construction industries.
Hi, I'm Jessica.
I'm Nurjiti.
And I'm Lizzie.
After we graduated from Syracuse University School of Architecture, we set out to learn and share the untold stories of women that traditional school curriculum left out.
One day, there's an announcement on campus that women had been seen wearing, quote, inappropriate clothing. Gasp!
What the heck does that mean?
Yeah, so it turns out that Ruth and her fellow classmates were these women. They had field classes where they're doing welding, forging, and foundry work, and obviously they have to wear jeans to those classes instead of, like, dresses or whatever else.
While Gertie was in school, she wasn't just going to classes, trying to stay alive like some of us. I know that was me in school, just taking it day by day.
Yes.
But not Gertie. She became the president of EVIGOL, an honorary association of Cornell women architects.
Of course she did.
These are stories not taught in schools. Women who've molded the world of architecture, construction, and development for over a century.
From Jane Jacobs to Ray Eames, She Builds Podcast explores the legacies of trailblazers. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform.
Let's fill the gaps in history together. All you have to do is follow the link in the show notes and subscribe and be part of a movement to expand industry narratives.
And so another project that you and I are working on together is a project that's located on East Lexington Street, and it's with Springboard Community Services. And it will be, when it's complete, it will be transitional housing for formerly homeless youth. And this is actually two historic buildings that we are combining into one. So we're going to be connecting them internally. And then it's also going after enterprise green communities and receiving historic tax credits. I think, is it also receiving new market tax credits?
It is, yes.
Nice. And so let's talk actually a little bit about how you can stack the new markets and the historic.
Yes. So historic tax credits are an incredible resource for historic buildings. If you're in a, if you are able to secure a historic designation on your building, I think one important thing to note on historic designations is that your building definitely has to be 50 years old, but it needs to either be in a historic district or individually listed on the historic register. But just because you don't have those things when the project starts, you should look into and see if it's conceivable that you could secure that designation, because it takes a little bit of extra time, but it can be worth it for the money that's needed to really complete the project. So historic tax credits are specifically for historic buildings. There's a federal historic tax credit that you get by right. If you're a historic designation, you get the tax credit. There's a state historic tax credit program, which is competitive. There are every year, the application is submitted about a month from now, and there's far more applications that go in than tax credits available in the state of Maryland. And there's also a cap on how much you can use per project. It is a really important benefit to your capital stack if you can secure the tax credits. We're always advocating for the state to increase their allotment of state historic tax credits, because it is a really important economic driver for these projects. We also like to layer on, when we can, new markets tax credits, which are specifically can be used on any building, new construction or adaptive reuse renovation. But what's important for new markets tax credits is it has to be within an eligible census tract per new markets regulation. So the purpose of new markets tax credits is to drive additional investment into low-income communities. And in the case of both PS 103 and the projects at 210 East Lexington Street, the project is benefiting these low-income communities and was able to secure new markets allocation, which is also highly competitive. But that's a federal program only. So Nikita, we talked a little bit about the project that we're working on together at 210 East Lexington Street in downtown Baltimore. Can you tell us a little bit more about that project and the challenges related to adaptive reuse and sustainability?
Absolutely. And so this project has been a joy, but also provided a number of growing opportunities and opportunities to be creative with some of the design decisions that we needed to make. The buildings that we're working on, they are right next to each other. They're currently not internally connected, and their floor levels don't align. And so by needing to connect them internally, there's been a lot of how do we do some communicating stairs? How do we, or where do we place the elevator to make sure we can kind of do a double-sided elevator to get to each of the levels? And then also some of the things that were surprising to us were navigating some of the requirements in the various authorities having jurisdiction, or AHJs. One of the things that many people may not think about often is the fact that Baltimore City is in a floodplain, and sometimes FEMA redraws where the floodplain lines are. And even if you have an existing building, you still have to comply. But Baltimore City does tend to have more stringent floodplain requirements than FEMA dictates, but they do work hand in hand with FEMA. And so when you're working on projects, you always have to be mindful of which AHJ has the final say. And sometimes it's more of the local jurisdiction, sometimes it's more the federal jurisdiction, but just being mindful of that. So one of the things that we've been grateful for on this project is how the various consultants and agencies and clients and all of that have been able to really put our heads together to come up with a good solution to figure out how we can make the project move forward. And a lot of times on adaptive reuse projects, that's what needs to happen. You really have to remind everyone that you're on the same team to navigate all of the regulation hurdles and make sure that we're doing things in the right order. I know on this project, we made sure that we got the historic tax credits, so both the state and the federal. And then we're also making sure that we're getting the different requirements and approvals needed. So the amendments, as well as the other approvals to keep this project moving forward to minimize any sort of permitting issues. I guess in terms of adaptive reuse in general, always adding extra time because things don't always go according to plan. There's always unforeseen conditions, and things often just take a little bit longer than expected. I know Baltimore City has a new BFAST program that the permit office is putting together, trying to increase the speed at which projects can get through the permitting process, but it is still not a quick thing. It's typically not a one-week situation to get your building permit for a commercial property.
You bring up a good point about speed, which, of course, the longer projects take, the more money it costs as well. Just why the tax credit programs are so important. And there's also, I mean, just the surprises that come along the way are, having never worked on a completely new construction building, I don't know, but I assume that in new construction, there's maybe less unforeseen conditions that come about because you're more familiar with the system with which you're operating.
Right.
So given the challenges of adaptive reuse and historic preservation, Nikita, why do you do it?
Aside from being a little bit obsessed with existing buildings, it's also, I really see building reuse as climate action. There is such a strong connection between the climate crisis, social inequity, as well as the benefits of building reuse, that it makes no sense to me to build a new building when we have all of these beautiful vacant buildings just waiting to be reused and put to better purpose. I don't think that we have the carbon time to demolish all of our historic buildings and do new construction. And we're not going to build our way to net zero or carbon neutrality by just working with new buildings. And so since I know that there are plenty of people who love new construction, I'm going to stay with my strength of working with existing buildings since it really is something I enjoy doing. Because I also just think that there's something really special about positioning ourselves within the time continuum of our society. And when I'm working on a building that was constructed 50, 100 years ago, I can't help but think about what the building will be in the next 50 or 100 years. And so I really like that idea of how time plays with existing buildings. What about you? What makes you stay in the existing building game?
I'm with you. And I think also just, you know, yeah. And I think of it because my training is in planning. So I think of it more as like being in a neighborhood and just we have everything we need here. We just mm-hmm. need to invest in it and bring it back to life. But I think what you said really resonated with me about really being a part of a building's history, especially for the PS 103 project, which educated Thurgood Marshall, and mm-hmm. being able to bring that back to the community and have, you know, neighborhood youth who walk the same halls that Thurgood Marshall walked 100 right. years ago is just really valuable. And I think helps just celebrate the amazing history that our communities have. And bringing additional investment into these communities helps them, you know, kind of appreciate all that their neighborhood has been and also dream about what their neighborhood could be in the future.
Absolutely. And I love that idea of really using the past as a way to dream about the future. Because I think sometimes there's a misconception that preservation is about keeping something stagnant or that mm-hmm. the existing buildings has to remain looking how it did. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times we're really just trying to modernize the existing buildings. We can do additions to them, or we can change the interior layout. But we can do other things to them without having to throw away the entire building. Mm-hmm. And knowing you and I are of similar ages, and
the marketing campaign of, I guess, the late 80s and 90s of reduce, reuse, recycle, you know? Definitely, they were listed in that order for that reason. So I really love the idea of, you know, we are reusing these buildings. We're reducing the need to build new construction by reusing these historic buildings before we have to recycle them.
Yeah. Well, and even for the 210 East Lexington project, even thinking about how our community has changed since COVID, you know, one of the buildings, the namesake 210 East Lexington Street was, you know, mixed office building before the pandemic, primarily with a law firm. Everyone decided to work from home and the building went for sale and the new user making that building into a transitional housing space is just really, you know, understanding that the building doesn't serve the purpose anymore as an office building downtown. There's not the demand anymore. So it's really exciting to also be working with partners who are able to think creatively about how to breathe new life into these buildings that, you know, are never going to have the same use again.
Right.
But it definitely takes creativity and patience and a lot of tax credits and subsidy.
Yes. And it's definitely one of those, working with existing and historic buildings, it can be daunting for people who have never done it before. But I think as long as you hire the right team and you're working with professionals who know how to do the right things in the right order, and also are willing to be a team player as opposed to, you know, a little bit more insidious as sometimes different professionals can be. So making sure that you have the right team in place will help navigate you through it.
I think that's huge, Nikita. On all of my projects, I think of all of the people I work with as partners, and you can't do it without that attitude. And I appreciate your partnership on the projects we've worked with. And I'm glad we had the time to have this conversation today. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Thank you so much for listening. Links to amazing resources can be found in the episode's show notes. Special thanks to Sarah Gilberg for allowing me to use snippets of her song Fireflies from her debut album, Other People's Secrets, which, by the way, is available wherever music is sold. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the show. And now that Tangible Remnants is part of the Gable Media Network, you can listen and subscribe to all network partner content at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. Until next time. Remember that historic preservation is a present conversation with our past about our future. We don't inherit the earth from our parents, but we borrow it from our children. So let's make sure we're telling our inclusive history.
I saw the first fireflies of summer. And right then, I thought of you. Oh, I could see us catching them and setting them free. Honey, that's what you do. That's what you do to me.